So what I will ask you all to do is, let's read Paragraph Bet again. We had a very nice discussion, a lot of different issues raised last time. I won't really summarize too much at all, and we'll just kind of try to figure things out from afresh. But take a look at Paragraph Bet, Pasuk Aleph through Kaf Gimel. Read the whole thing, and then we will begin our discussion. The whole thing, till Kaf Gimel. Okay, memories are refreshed, right? So I've decided to change my mind in the last 2 to 3 minutes, and I will do a little bit of chazara, at least just to very much to situate us, to some extent to situate us in terms of what we were discussing and what we had discussed. So I think, as I pointed out last time, that the perek more or less breaks down into 4 parts. And the 4 parts are as follows. Let's pick it up in Perek Kafet. The first part of the parak is David's sojourn in the cave. David's fleeing to Eretz Moav, right? And that runs from Pasuk Aleph, more or less, somewhere around Pasuk Hey, where God HaNavi appears and tells him, oh, go back to Eretz Yehuda, right? So we can kind of think of Kafbet Aleph through Hey as a story of David in the Ma'ara, David's disappearance, David's hiding, David's fleeing to Moab, as the case may be, and his eventual return. Pasuk Vav begins the second part, or a kind of turn in the Parak. And here we have what I described as, well, let's take a look at it, let's read. Pasuk Vav, Vishma Sha'ul, ki noda David v'anashim asher ito v'shol yoshev v'giva, tachat ha'eshel, Sha'ul heard, he sat underneath the giva, underneath the shady tree, Brahma, the high place. Now I pointed out that if you have this image of the chanito biyado, this is not just a spear, this is the scepter of rule, right? It's symbolic of his kingship. You have his avadim nitzavim alav, he's surrounded by his servants. This is kind of the scene at the royal court, right? He has at the Giv'ah on the Ramah, and then there's going to be this conversation between him and his advisors, his avadim, his bnei binyamin. That's really beginning, so to speak, the second part of the parak, the scene at the royal court, where of course Shaul says what he says, and the men of Binyamin say what they say, and his avadim say what they say, and Doeg speaks up and say, oh, I saw Ben Yishai over there in Nov, and this scene at the court of Shaul, or at the Givah, the accusations that fly back and forth, and the report of Doeg goes on more or less. I think the next turn is approximately somewhere around Pasuk Yud Aleph, right? Take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vishlach HaMelech likro et Achimelech ben Achitov. He sent to call Achimelech ben Achitov HaKohen ve'et kol Beit Aviv HaKohenim HaShebenov ve'yavo kolam el HaMelech. So that's really part of the previous scene, right? The summons In light of the report of Doeg, of Achimelech ben Achitub and the Kohanim to the court, is still part of part two. It's part of the scene at the court. I begin, I believe the real turn happens in Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayoma Shaul Shma na ben Achitub vayoma hineni Adoni. The dialogue, or the interrogation, of Achitub, of Achimelech, really begins the third part of the parak. And this runs, I think, more or less until the Gzar Din against Achimelech and the Kohanim, which is around Pasuk Yud Zayin, etc. And then eventually, I guess you get to the fourth part of the parak, which I say begins about Pasuk Yud Chet. You have destruction of the Ear of Nov, which runs from Yud Chet until more or less the end of the parak on some plane. So I would say roughly this could be divided into four parts. Part one, the story of David and the Marah, David's fleeing. Part two, the scene at the court of Shaul, including the report of Doeg. Part three, the interrogation of Achimelech and the Gzar Din against the Ir HaKohanim. And part four, the destruction of the Ir of the Kohanim and the aftermath, which includes, of course, Eviatar, the sole survivor, fleeing to David. And this is more or less what we went through. Now, in addition to reviewing the four parts of the parak, I would like to review four distinct questions that we raised in last shiur. And they were as follows, perhaps even in some particular order. Question one, the structure of the parak here raises the obvious, almost Sesame Street-like game. Which one of these parts does not belong? And we pointed out that it isn't particularly clear what exactly part one is doing in the parak. It seems to be almost a break in the action. In other words, if you think about parak Kaf Aleph, right, as the story of what happened in Nov, when David went there and he got the lechem and he got the cherev and etc. And then eventually what happens in Parak Kaf Bet is the result of that, right? It's cause and effect, right? It's occurrence and result. Chet va'onesh from the perspective of Shaul and Doeg, right? And the story of Nov and the fate of Nov is taken up again in Parak Kaf Bet. From that perspective, part one of the parak, that story about David and the Marah, it's very much unclear what it's doing there, right? It's really unclear in what sense it's in the parak. Why is it there? It just seems like an interruption in the action. And we discussed this last time. There are a couple of very good suggestions made. Frankly, I don't really remember what they were. But for those of you who take notes, you can take notes. There's some very good things said. Check your notes, or check Tig's notes, or check someone's notes. There's some good things said, and I don't remember what was said. That was one issue we discussed last time. Now, second issue we discussed last time, I think it was almost as Doeg. Does Doeg tell the truth? Right? Remember this? Why did I raise some suspicions about whether Doeg tells the truth? What?
You didn't ask.
The whole Shaul ve'Elokim thing was really, really strange. It bothered me last time. Take a look in Pasuk Tet, right? In Pasuk Tet, it says as follows. Vayan Doeg Adomi v'hu nitzav alav dei Shaul v'yomer reiti et ben Yishai banova el Achimelech ben Achitov v'yishal lo b'shem. The first thing that Doeg reports is that there was an asking from Hashem at Nov. V'tzeda natan lo, and he gave him food. V'et cherev Goliath haplishti natan lo, and he gave him the sword. Okay. Now, a bit later on, actually, when Shaul interrogates Achimelech in the third part of the parak. Take a look in Pasuk Yegimel. Vayomer lev Shaul, lama kashartem elai ata uben Yishai? Why do you conspire against me, you and Ben Yishai? Betitcha lo lechem v'cherev v'Shaul lo be'elokim. Shaul repeats it. Lakom alai orav k'yom azeh. And look what Achimelech responds in Pasuk Tetvav, right? He says, "Hayom achiloti l'shaul lo be'elokim, chalilali." Did I start this day to ask him chalilali to conspire against you? So it almost seems as if Achimelech maybe acknowledges the fact that he was shoel be'elokim for David, but he says, "Is the first time I ever did this? What's the big deal?" Right? Now, what's really interesting is that it seems very, very central as the first accusation that Doeg levels. Shaul repeats it. Achimelech maybe seems to acknowledge it. But if you go back to Parak Kaf Aleph, the original occurrence of the events, well, we really remember, right? It's really just about Lechem and the cherev goyat, the cherev, it's bread and weapons. There's nothing there about asking be'elokim. Take a look, for example, in pasuk chet, pasuk zayin, even right. Ve'itain lo hakohen kodesh ki lo yav shom lechem kim lechem apanim ma'usir min lefnei Hashem asum lechem kol biyom hilachos. He gave him the bread. And then jump down to pasuk tet. Vayomer David la'achimelech. Vayomer David la'achimelech. Ve'ein yesh po tachet yadcha chanito cherev. Ki gam chabi. And he asked for the sword. So it's really strange here that the Sheila Bashem seems to be central in Perek Kaf Bet, but it's completely missing from Perek Kaf Aleph. This is a kind of another issue we raised. And a third issue that we raised. Anybody remember? Anyone's memory spark? There's a third and a fourth. There were two other things we raised, at least. And remember, you, Yaakov?
Parallel between parts 2 and 3, what's the importance of the parallel?
Yeah, I left off what I thought was a really, really important literary... there were two important literary points that we discussed in the shiur, one which you guys came up with, and one which I came up with. First, I will do what you guys came up with, and then I will do what I came up with. What you guys came up with was the parallel between the story here and Perek Tet Vav in Sefer Shmuel, and let me explain what I mean by that. Take a look, eventually, deep in part 4, when Doeg goes and wipes out the Ir HaKohanim. Take a look in Pasuk Yud Tet for the moment. Okay. Ve'etnov Ir HaKohanim hika lefi cherev. He smote the city by sword. Me'ish v'adisha, me'olel v'adyonik, v'shor v'chamor v'asel lefi cherev. It's completely wiped out by the sword. What's the phrase here? The phrase is Ish v'adisha me'olel v'adyonik, and animals. Ring any bells? Well, actually it should. Go back to Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Gimel. And there in the command to wipe out Amalek in Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Gimel, we read as follows, Atalich v'kipet Amalek, v'charamtem et kol ha'shalov v'lo tachmo alav v'imata me'ish v'adisha me'olel v'adyonik. That's the exact phrase. Me'ish v'adisha me'olel v'adyonik. And the mention of the animals. Mishor v'atzem migamov ad chamor. And of course, how do you do it, by the way? Take a look a bit further on in Pasuk Chet, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Chet. V'itbos dagag melech Amalek chai v'et kol ha'am hechrim lefi charev. It's done by the sword. So there are three parallels between the destruction of Nov Yir HaKohanim and the destruction of Amalek. One, the phrase of Me'olel v'adyonik. Two, Ish v'adisha. Three, it's by the charev. And remember there was a fourth.
That child was the real killer in both of them.
I think you added that. I didn't think of that. I point out there's a single survivor in both cases of genocide. There's Agag in the story of Shaul, and there's Evyatar in the story of Nov. Like, you know, some people often ask, the last two psukim in Perek Kaf Bet are a major switch in scene. Why are they a major switch in scene or in characters? Who are the central characters throughout Perek Kaf Bet? Who are they? Shaul, the Anshei Binyamin, his Avadim, Doeg, Achimelech ben Achitov, right? Doeg again. Who's completely missing from Perek Kaf Bet? David is apparently missing from Perek Kaf Bet until the very, very end of the story. He like reappears in the last two psukim, right? And we're going to discuss last time also. Take a look in Perek Kaf, Pasuk Kaf, Pasuk Kaf, sorry, it's towards the end of the Perek. Vayimaleit ben echad la'achimelech ben Achitov u'shmo Evyatar v'yivrach achrei David. He ran after David. And David actually is only an afterthought. He's only kind of there because this is where the sole survivor of the massacre, which is Domeh la'Amalek, runs to, right? And you can almost ask yourself, why is David found in the Perek at all? After all, the Perek's not about him, right, in any way. But he's part of the aftermath of what happens to the sole survivor of the massacre perpetrated by Shaul, which is kind of interesting. Same as that's maybe a fourth parallel. And you guys raised the point of what's the point of this parallel striking. It really needs to be worked out. There was one last thing I raised about the Perek, which I want to review before trying to do some sort of comprehensive analysis of the Perek. I was intrigued by what I thought was a fascinating intra-Perek parallel, I guess we would call this, inside the Perek, between parts 2 and part three. And let me explain what I mean by this. Part two I called the scene at Shaul's court, and part three I called the interrogation of Achimelech and the Gzar Din against the Kohanim. There's a fascinating commonality between these two parts, and we should look at the language and also the themes here. Let's get up to briefly review in Pasuk Zayin for the moment. And we have as follows in Perek Kafet Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer Shaul la'avadav hanitzavim elav, Shimuna ben Yemini gam l'kulchem yitain ben Yishai sadot ukramim l'kulchem yasim sere elefim v'sarei meot. So we have here Vayomer and Shimuna, which is his address. Now take a look what he says in Pasuk Chet. Ki kshartem kuchem elai, you've all conspired against me, ve'en golet azni, and you're all holding back this information from me. Bechrat b'ni in ben Yishai. He refers to this conspiracy with ben Yishai. You have kshartem and ben Yishai, which is kind of a second, you know, linguistic grouping and idea here of the conspiracy with ben Yishai. And the third kind of thematic point here is the idea of surprise. There's this ambush and this concealing of information, right? It's related to the idea of conspiring with Ben Yishai, but the key words here are the idea of Ein Golet Azni, right? And he says it twice in Pasuk Chet. Ein Golet Azni Bechrot Bni in Ben Yishai Ve'en Chole Michem Alai Ve'Golet Azni Ki'ikim Bni Et Avi Alai La'orev. Okay, Omar said, there's an ambush and information is being concealed with me. So you have these three ideas. You have the address, Vayomer Ve'yishma, Vayomer Shema, and we have the second, the idea of the conspiracy with Ben Yishai, the Kshartem and Ben Yishai, and we have the third, which is the concealing of information and the ambush, the Ein Golet Azni and the Orev. Now what's really interesting is that all three of these features or aspects return or repeat in part three of the Perek, in the interrogation of Achimelech and the Gzar Din against Nov. And let's pick it up for the moment in Pasuk Yud Bet, where it's really obvious. We can just go 1, 2, 3 and see it again. Pasuk Yud Bet says as follows. Vayomer Shaul Shmana ben Achitov. So here's the Vayomer of the Shema, which it begins the interrogation. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Lev Shaul Lama Kshatem Alay Atao Ben Yishai. Here's the Kshatem of Ben Yishai, the conspiracy of Ben Yishai. What about part 3? The ambush and the concealing of information. We go on in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Uben Yishai b'titcha lo lechem v'cher v'sha'ul lo be'elokim lakum elai lo'orev kayom hazeh. There's the ambush in Pasuk Yud Gimel. And interestingly enough, there's no mention of the concealing of information, but later on, after the Gzar Din, and then the Avadim refuse to do it, at the very end of part 3, take a look at the last words of part, the last Pasuk of part 3, Pasuk Yud Zayin. There it is, they concealed information, and that's in part 3 there. So these were kind of the four questions that we raised in last shiur, and this is a bit of a review. One, the mention of Ohuv Hashem here is kind of a key theme when missing previously. Two, the strange disruption, so to speak, in the flow of things by part 1 of the Perek. Three, the interesting parallel to the story of Amalek, and four, the interesting intra-parallel regarding the interrogation by Shaul of respectively either his Anshei Binyamin or the people of the Kohanim of Nov. Okay, so does anyone have anything to say? Let's just put all this on the side. I just wanted to touch upon these things again on some plane as part of the review. It was a long break between then and now. Anything to say about the parak in terms of how to read it or what to do with it or what's it about? Something might explain its structure, its themes, or any interpretations to present. Anyone have any ideas? Anything to comment on? Yeah, you hear.
I mentioned this last time. It was more of an answer, so you probably ignored it.
Possibly.
But one thing I found in this paragraph was that both David and Shaul will become more extreme in sort of their own directions. Like we've always, until now, we've seen David sort of not really doing much. Sort of on the, in better direction. We see sort of David on the fringe a little bit. He gets all the bad people of society go with him. He goes outside of Israel. Then he gets corrected and he goes back into Yehudah by Hashem. And he eventually takes like the refugees of Shaul in, like the good refugees of Shaul in at the end, and he becomes sort of something we could actually, you know, like we want as king. And the opposite of Shaul until now hasn't really done anything so bad. He's sort of been, he's acted like a normal king who wants to protect his kingdom, which is legitimate, you know, seems legitimate. And we've never really seen such a big reason why David needs to do all this. And then we see him doing something, you know, absolutely horrible, and then we say, oh, David, you know, Shaul has gone to this extreme where we need David to take them apart. So it's like they crisscross.
Okay, I like everything you said. You said three very important things. One thing you said is that you can read this parak about Shaul and about David. It's not just about Shaul, it's also about David in some way. In an interesting way, even though he's not found there until the very last few psukim of the parak. He's disappeared, and then he reemerged at the very end. And we did discuss this a little bit last time, I remember now. Yeah, that's one interesting thing you said. The second thing you said is that it's about David and Shaul in terms of their characters. Something very important about their characters. And then the third thing you said, and you might not have meant this, but it did come out of your mouth to some extent, is that this is a parak about the malchut of Shaul versus the malchut of David on some level. It's almost as if the two malchiot, and I'll get this a bit later, it's almost the two malchiot are passing in the night. Or is that one sinks, one is rising. So there's a political as opposed to a character reading of the parak here. I think both of those ideas are fused. The political reading and the character reading are fused here together. I want to explain by what I mean by that as I go along. But I think those are all three very, very good points. So we'll come back to all of them in just a few moments. Yeah, Yaakov.
Maybe just similarly here, but the answering the question why the first part is there, it's just setting up that David is such a, is at the beginning of the parak and until this point has been on the run. He's been meek. He hasn't been doing much for himself. Like he runs away to all these different places and he has to act crazy and he doesn't.
He's completely passive. Michal hides him. Yonatan takes care of him. Then he goes to the city. He's a crazy man,
exactly.
Right?
So this is like David's introduction into action, and it comes at a really terrible price. And I think that like a lot of imagery within the parak itself is supposed to show that price. And obviously the Amalek thing is the thing that really stands out, that he did that Doeg destroys Nob, like one is supposed to destroy Amalek, but there are a few things like Shaul is meeting he's meeting under the tree with his spear in his hand and his servants all around him. It's kind of reminiscent of like a war council. Like Shaul's always on the move, Shaul's always active, Shaul's always trying to do something, and David is like hanging out in the forest, like, you know, just trying to stay alive.
He's playing his harp. I don't know what he's doing there. Yeah.
Maybe he's.
Hey, listen, I don't know if I would go as far as you said in the first part of your comment. It's not my kind of thing to say, but you know, if this is whenever there's a rise of something or birth of something, there are going to be birth pangs, and when there are birth pangs, there's going to be lots of blood, right? Things are born out of blood. On some plane, and there's this kind of idea that's out there, right? So there's certainly maybe a way to combine Yair's reading of the parak with what you're suggesting here, is that it's exactly because this is the sort of the birth of Malchut David in some nascent way, hence that comes at a cost, the price of the blood of the Ira Kohanim, or something along these lines, which is a very interesting idea, and that would explain the connection to the horrible imagery of the Amalek story. Interesting idea. I'll come back a little bit later. I'm not sure I want to go that far. Anything else you want to add?
Just another image. I think I mentioned this last time, but in Pesuk Ted Zion, I think to emphasize the like terribleness of what happens, the line is "Vayomer Hamelach Mot Tamut Achimelach." So you're going to die, the brother of the king, meaning he's committing genocide not only against Kohanim or Kohanim Hashem, he's committing genocide against his siblings.
You mentioned that. And I said I like that. I'd come back to it. Okay, what I want to do. I want to try to read the parak in all the different ways that you're suggested. Just kind of move through it, and picking up and touching upon many of the issues that we discussed along the way, to try to provide something coherent. Let's pick it up in what I called part two, parak kapet pasik vav. Certainly, reading the parak as about the character of Shaul. Let's kind of read this carefully. So let's pick it up in parak kapet pasik vav. Vayishma Shaul. Kinoda David vanashim asher ito. Shaul heard that David and his men became known. V'Shaul yoshev b'giv'ah, tachat ha'eshel, b'ramah, the high place, v'chanito v'yado, the sword or the scepter of rulership is in his hand. Now, so what is Shaul's position?
He's up high.
He's up high, right? Not just up high physically, Brahma, but he's up high in terms of his status, right? He's the king, he's got the chanit, and his avadim are surrounding him, and yeah. And by the way, just almost in terms of implicit contrast, where's David?
In the forest.
He's in a cave, he's in the forest, he's a refuge in Moab. How many men does he have? 400 men. What kind of guys are they?
Ruffians.
Desperate men, you know, ruffians, they're debtors, right? So how much of a threat is David?
Not.
There's this incredible kind. You can always count on Reich Shlomo. Right? There's
like somebody else saying like
what?
A long sentence that doesn't help you much.
Yeah. But yashar v'lanyan, as they say in Hebrew, right? So, but I dragged it out with all my comments about it, right? So it didn't really save time in the end, right? So, the point is, you can go one of two ways here. You could say that you're supposed to notice the contrast and realize that there's the stimulus and there's the response. And the proportionality issue is kind of interesting here. Now, by the way, that itself could explain the inclusion of part one in the perek. It's as background for part two. That would be kind of a resolution to one of the issues that we raised. Let's go along and let's read on. V'chalav adav nitzavim alav. Pasuk Zayin. V'yomar Shaul lavadav hanitzavim alav. Shimuna b'nei yimini. Oh, here, men of Binyamin. Gam l'kochem yitain ben Yishai sadot ukramim. L'kochem yasim sar elefem v'sarei meot. Is Ben Yishai going to give to all of you fields and vineyards and make you all into sarei elefim v'sarei meot? Now, what does it sound like at this point, before we go any further, what does it sound like Shaul is trying to do in this king's conference, in this court scene? What's he trying to do?
Spend the biggest cut.
At the very beginning of it, are you convinced of that? At the very beginning, before we go any further, just in Pasuk Zayin alone, Vayomer Shaul avadav v'nitzavim alav, or Vav and Zayin together. He heard that they're back, right? They're back, and they're in the forest, and then he has the courts, and what's supposed to happen next? He's supposed to talk to his B'nai Yamini, which are his tribesmen, right? He's supposed to speak to his guys. What should he say?
He's trying to convince them to be loyal to him.
Yeah. And but certainly what he should try to garner support, right? He should say, okay, guys, we have a problem, and we, this our shevet, have to get together and make sure that they don't take over. In other words, what kind of tone might you try to sound as a leader in this kind of context?
Uplifting.
If you're trying to rally the troops, you're trying to build loyalty and rally the clansmen, what kinds of things would you say? I don't know what kinds of things he would say, but let's go on and see the kinds of things that Shaul does say, right? Let's think about his tone here, right? Vayomer Shaul avadav hanitzavim alav shimuna b'nei yemini gam l'kochem yitein ben Yishai sadot ukramim l'kochem yasim sar elefim sar meot. Will Ben Yishai give all of you sadot ukramim? Will he make all of you sar elefim sar meot? Ki kishartem kolchem. All of you tied or conspired a lie against me. Ve'en golet azni. No one gave me any information. V'chrot b'ni and ben Yishai. Ve'en cholem michem elai. None of you are sick for me or care about me. V'golet azni giving me information. Ke'ekim b'ni et avdi alach alai la'orev kayom azeh. And, so, what's the tone here?
Accusatory,
yes. It's an accusation. It's an interrogation against his tribesmen. The tone is bitter. The tone is near paranoid. Everybody's conspiring against me. That's what it boils down to. Everybody is conspiring against me. Now, how many times does he say everybody? He says kolchem three times, right? All of you, right? The word appears three times. See it again in Pasuk Zayin. V'yom ha'shol avadav ha'nitzavim al shimu na'b'nei yemini gam l'kolchem yitein ben Yishai sadot ukramim l'kolchem yasim sar elefim sar meot ki kishartem kolchem. That's the three times. And there are a bunch of these M endings in addition. Ki kishartem is an M ending. V'ein chole michem is a fifth M ending, right? Etc. Now, where does this sense that Shaul is operating with? I mean, again, we're expecting a rallying of the troops, and instead we get an interrogation and accusation of his tribesmen. Now, where does the sense of everybody being against him, the kolchem, where does it come from? Where does the sense of everybody's against him come from? Why does he think that?
He has this paranoia for Even his son helped David.
People are helping
David. Say again?
People are helping David.
Yeah, because who helped David until this point?
Everybody else.
Everybody else. Right.
His children.
Right, his children. Yonatan and Michal both helped David. Now, if you think about it, he actually explicitly refers to Yonatan twice. It sounds like he's rallying his troops for battle, and suddenly before you know it, he's accusing everybody of being against them. And who's the chief being person who's against him? It's his Ben. He says it twice, right? Take a look.
Wait,
and
can we say that Yonatan, like, consciously switched to Shaul's side?
Yes, but it doesn't matter, because Shaul doesn't see it that way. We saw it that way. We read the previous two prokem ago, but not that was Yonatan's choice, but not here in Pasuk Chet. Look what he says. Ki kshartem kochem elai ve'en golet azni bichrot b'ni im ben Yishai. No one told me when he made a covenant with Ben Yishai. Ve'en cholem ichem alai ve'golet azni ki ekim b'ni. My son established et davdi alai la'orev. My son organized the ambush against me. So twice he refers to his Ben being against him, conspiring against him, making an ambush for him. So the whole idea of the whole language of kshartem and orev and the conspiracy against Shaul really begins with who? With the Ben, the unnamed Yonatan, who's in the background of this parak. Now, of course, we should just very briefly go back to remember where this happened. It was back in Parak Kaf. Take a look in Parak Kaf, Pasuk Lamed, that final accusation that Shaul made against Yonatan. In Parak Kaf, Pasuk Lamed, we have the following. Ve'ichar af Shaul b'Yonatan, ve'yomer lo ben navat hamardut. You've rebelled against me. Halo yadati ki bocherata leven Yishai levashtecha ulevoshet ervat imecha. So yeah, I know that you've chosen Ben Yishai over me, says to him. Now, previously back in Parakaf, there's some objective reality to what Shaul accuses Yonatan of at the end of Parakaf. Take a look, go back to really very interesting phrase. Take a look in Pasuk Yudbet. Parakaf Pasuk Yudbet. Vayomer Yonatan al David, Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Yonatan said to David, God the Lord of Israel, ki achkar David, I will check him out. Ka'et machar shishit v'nei tov el David, if it's good for David, v'lo az eshlach elecha v'galiti et aznecha, I will reveal it to your ears, I will give you information, is what Yonatan promised David. Ko yaseh Hashem leYonatan v'ko yosef ki yitiv el avi et arai elecha, and if it's going to do bad, v'galiti et aznecha, a second time galiti et aznecha. And then take a look in Pasuk Yudal, v'lo im yodenu chai lo taseim adi chesed Hashem b'mot. There's the language of Brit, and in Pasuk Tet Zayin again, Vayichrot Yonatan and Beit David. So there was a Brit, and the Brit between Yonatan and David is literally symbolized by the notion of Galah et Aznecha, of the flow of information. The Brit is a Brit of information, where the Brit between Yonatan and David involves Yonatan giving information to David. And what does Shaul say here? He twice refers to everybody being like his Ben, and he refers to this idea of lo megalim et azni, no one's giving me any information. And that's all part of the conspiracy and the ambush against him. So it's kind of the reverse, the same but the reverse of Perek Kaf, where previously there was this Brit Yeda, or Brit Megale Azno between Yonatan and David. Here, what does Shaul say? The Brit was with David, and no one's making a Brit of being Megalel Aznayim with me, and everybody's against me, etc., etc., etc. Now, the point I want to make is that this is a dysfunctional political situation. What happens here is that because of the alliance, or quasi-alliance, between Yonatan and David, Shaul expands from this, from his son being against him, to assuming that all of Benyamini are against him. And you have this picture of this isolated, embittered, and near paranoid king, a dysfunctional malchut. And even though the whole threat just involves 400 desperados in a cave, really actually nothing compared to the state apparatus of malchut, still nevertheless, Shaul's reaction is completely out of proportion to the stimulus, precisely because he's obsessed, embittered, paranoid, isolated, etc. Now, now we move to the next scene. Reading this politically, we're reading it both psychologically and politically simultaneously. Let's look what happens in the next pasuk. Okay, we go on. Pasuk tet. Okay, vayan doeg adomi v'hu nitzav al avdei Shaul. Now, what does that mean? So doeg the adomi. Who's doeg the adomi? He's the Abir HaRoim. He's, first of all, he's a foreigner. He's an Edomite. He's an Nachri. Who's David talking to? He's talking to the Bnei Amin. He's talking to his tribesmen. The ultimate opposite of his tribesmen, of his clansmen, is this foreigner, this nobody. Now, Nitzav al Avdei Shaul means he could be commanding Avdei Shaul. Now, I don't think it means he's commanding Avdei Shaul, because he's just the Meknes specialist, as we know previously from the previous parak. He's just the cattle guy. He's the herder, which we know from Pasuk Chet that Avi just quoted. Take a look back in Parak Kaf Aleph, Pasuk Chet. He's just the Abir HaRoim. So I would argue that Pasuk Tet should be read as follows. He's standing there, Al Avdei Shaul. Not that he's appointed over them, but he's on the outskirts. He's an outsider. He's a foreigner. He's secondary to Avdei Shaul. And now, suddenly, at this moment, the outsider speaks up. And what does the outsider do? I saw Ben Yishai back in Nov, right? And Ben Yishai, that's a bit of a nasty phrase. Achimelech ben Achitov, what should he call him?
Kohen,
but he doesn't call him Kohen Hashem, he just calls him by his name. Pasuk Yud, Vayishal lo b'Hashem. Oh, and he inquired of God. He committed the ultimate treason by asking a shayla. True?
No.
Not true? Maybe? I think it's not true. It's a lie. It's a lie by the opportunistic outsider who's trying to further his place in the dysfunctional court run by the paranoid king, who's looking for people to tell him what he wants to hear on some plane. So we go on further. Now, by the way, here's another kind of interesting issue. Did Achimelech really give him Cherev HaPlishti? Go back to Perek. Yeah, did he really cooperate and give him a Cherev HaPlishti? Go back to Perek Kaf Aleph. Take a look in Pasuk Yud after the asked for a Cherev. In Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Yud, Ve'yomer HaKohen Cherev Goyat HaPlishti Asher Ikita Be'emek Ha'ila Hinehi Lutabaze. Here it's wrapped up over here. Lutabasimla Achrei Eifod. It's wrapped up behind that Eifod over there. Imoto Tikach L'Chakach. If you want to take it, kach it. I have nothing else here. Now, at that point, what happens? We don't know. Did Achimelech actually walk over to the wall, but go behind the ephod, unwrap the cherev, and give it to David? Maybe. But I don't think so. It seems that he said, and kach appears twice, and David says, give it to me, and the conversation ends there. I don't think Achimelech gave it to him, because Achimelech knew that there was something weird or strange about David coming and taking the cherev of Goliath HaPlishti. And I would suggest that Doeg is interested in doing what? Doeg is interested in making Achimelech look bad. So he calls him Achimelech ben Achitov. He uses the term Natan. And this is the story of the semi-deceitful outsider who's exploiting the dysfunctionality of the court and the paranoia of the king to rise to prominence. And this is why this information never came out previously. And now we know why this doesn't follow directly after the heels of Perek Kaf Aleph. Remember the problem, why does the beginning of Perek Kaf interrupt here? It interrupts, I think, because the information of what happened in Perek Kaf Aleph is being saved by Doeg to some extent for the right moment. And now, here, he just brings it out when he needs it, right? So I think this is another explanation as to why that first part of Perek Kaf interrupts, because the information was deliberately held back, so to speak, by Doeg for the moment when he needed it, and we kind of move along here. Now, you were going to say something?
I retract what I was going to say before, but I don't really get why you're saying that the first part is here, because could you just explain that again?
Because you know what? This didn't have to happen. It's not like there's a close cause and effect or sin and punishment relationship between Perek Kaf and Perek Kaf Aleph. It wasn't like what happened in Perek Kaf inevitably leads to Perek Kaf Aleph, and therefore the story of David in the Ma'ara is some sort of interruption. No. The truth is that Perek Kaf Aleph could have been forgotten about as the distant past. But it's rather, it's brought forth and brought into play, Perek Kaf, by Doeg to further his ends of rising in the court, because in this political reading, it's all about telling a certain story which furthers the rise of this very, very dodgy, shaky, shady character who's, so to speak, taking over the Malchut Shaul. And we all know this is where eventually this is going to lead. Now, the point is that just to kind of present this as a kind of coherent reading, as we move along, what about part three? The interrogation of Achimelech. So Shaul calls him in, okay, and he talks to him, and he tells him this, and he tells him that. And what does he accuse him of? Kshartem and Ben Yishai, Orev, you too, not just my son, and not just my tribe's members, but even my Kohen, even the whole Kohen city, even my trusted Kohen, almost the brother of the king, Achimelech, who I stored the Cherev of Goliath with, my sanctuary, Nov is quite near Givah, by the way, my private place of Kuna and Malchut, right? Even you guys are against me, and the language just repeats over and over and over. So I think this resolves the other issue I raised, why the repetition? It's the same story, just in ever-expanding circles. It begins with the Ben, it goes to the whole tribe, and then it's even the Irak Kohanim, and it's this picture of the embittered, paranoid Shaul, and this kind of the picture of Malchut that it is. Now, what results with all this? Let's pick it up now. The very end of Pasuk. Let's read you Pasuk Yizayin. Let's jump to Pasuk Yizayin. Vayomer Hamelech. By the way, how much of a chance did Achimelech have of defending himself? Exactly. This was not an interrogation. This wasn't even a trial. Right? It was just a summary judgment, right? And the fact that the language repeats emphasizes the point of this being a summary judgment. The verdict is in before the trial began, right? That's really, really clear, right? And you should just realize that, right? Now we go, it doesn't matter what Achimelech said, right? He could deny the Sheila Bashem, he could not deny the Sheila Bashem. He could explain how wonderful David is. It doesn't matter. There's nothing he can do. Now, take a look at Pasuk Yizayin. Ve'yomer Melech LaRatzim, so the king said to the Ratzim, Hanitzavim Alav, Sobu v'amitu Kohanei Hashem, go and surround the Kohanei Hashem and kill them, because they'd all come in, right? They'd all come in with Achimelech when they were called in, right? Pasuk Yud Aleph. Veishlach Hamelech Akrot Achimelech ben Achitov Hakohen et Kol Beit Aviv Hakohenim Asher Beno v'Yovu Kolam. They all came in, so they're standing there. So when the Melech at the court scene, the Melech says to the Ratzim, go kill them all right now, the whole group of them. It's not like there's a sentencing date, right? The execution is meant to happen right there on the spot, right? Sobu v'amitu kohanei Hashem ki gam yadam im David ki yadu ki boreachu v'lo galu et azni v'lo avu avdei Avimelech l'shalach yadam l'fko v'kohanei. They wouldn't do it. So they wouldn't do it. So now, if they wouldn't do it, what happens? What happens if the king's men wouldn't do it? Probably they left, right? But the point is that there's kind of complete and total rebellion here that they refuse to do it. Now, do they not do it because of their Kohen Hashem? Do they not do it because they think Shaul is crazy? Do they not do it because they don't think that the punishment fits the crime? I don't know why they don't do it. But what you should see here in the Perek is that there's almost a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Shaul thinks that everyone is against him. And he accuses everybody of being against him. It begins with Bnei Binyamin, it spreads to the Kohanim of Nov, and by the time he's done, yes, it's true, everybody is against him. And his Avadim will not carry out the Psak Din that he made against the Kohanim of Nov. Yeah, Judah.
I think it's interesting that it could have said Kohanim, but it says Kohanei Hashem. And the fact that Doeg is the one that ends up doing it, I think could be a good proof that they didn't do it because of Kohen Hashem.
I think so. Most commentaries think it's because of Kohen Hashem, but then again, if the Melech gave a psak din that they're Moed B'Malchut, then the Melech gave a psak din that they're Moed B'Malchut. So at the end of the day, they're still disobeying the king, and they themselves are being Moed B'Malchut by disobeying the king. So no matter how you slice it, in the end of the day, this is the picture of one, the dysfunctional Malchut, where the king cannot rally his tribesmen. Two, the dysfunctional Malchut, where the manipulative outsider tells stories and rises to prominence and turns the king against the Kohen Hashem. Three, the dysfunctional Malchut, where the king He's unable to get his servants to carry this pesach din, and they themselves are the ones who are married by Malchut. And all this originates in the actions of Yonatan, in Shaul's character, in his paranoia, and it's a kind of ongoing self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, at this point, we're ready to get to part four, which is the culmination of this astounding dysfunction. And the culmination of this astounding dysfunction is the echo of the original dysfunction of Malchut Shaul, the inability to carry out Gzeirat Amalek, right? So previously the dysfunction was the inability to carry out Gzeirat Amalek, and here the dysfunction culminates in the yes ability, the Cain ability to carry out Gzeirat Amalek, but in a completely wrong and backwards way against Kohanei Hashem, and who does it? This horrible person Doeg, right? So I think that kind of serves as the culmination of the story. We also kind of explain the echo here of Amalek, where the original problem reverses itself. It's worse, right? But it's the same kind of issue. And we pick it up, and let's just kind of read it, but it's even important to see. Kafbet Yudchet. Ve'yom melech ha-doeg sovata, surround you, upaga ba-kohanim, ve'yisov doeg ha-domi ve'yifkahu ba-kohanim, and he killed them all, probably on the spot in the court. Ve'yamet ve'yom ha-hu shmonim ve'chamisha ish nosei eifud ba. There were 85 of them. So apparently there were 85 kohanim along with Achimelech, and I guess Doeg, either he was a very powerful warrior, he was an abir, right? Strong because of the sheep, or he had his henchmen. Now, who were his henchmen? I don't know. If he had henchmen, they weren't Avdei Shaul. They weren't Anshei Binyamin. Actually, they were hired. They were probably Anshei Adom. Maybe they were other Tot shepherds, sub shepherds. Maybe they were mercenaries. Who knows who they were, right? But you have what you have is a kind of group of, so to speak, probably hired hands who are not part of Bnei Israel committing murder of the Kohanim, right? And if they're Edomites are Bnei Esav, right? Right? Edomites are Bnei Esav. So previously, the Yisraelim did not kill Amalek or the Bnei Esav, and here you have the Bnei Esav killing Kohanei Hashem, right? So it's kind of the again, it's connected obviously to the Amalek situation in kind of a height of these things are not supposed to happen. And then he takes it to a step further. Pasuk Yutet. That Nov Ira Kohanim Mikal Lefikarev. He went and he smote the ear Lefikarev. It's the revenge of the Amalekites on some level, right? Now, this is not even supposed to happen. Shaul's original decree was nothing about the city. It was just kill the Kohanim standing in front of you, surround them and kill them. But after Doeg kills the Kohanim standing in front of him, he takes it to the next level. He obviously leaves and goes to Nov and eradicates the whole city, something that even Shaul had never commanded. So again, and that's where the Amalek imagery really creeps in. So it further highlights that a real disastrous end has been reached here for Malchut Shaul. What? Say again?
How do we know that Shaul was not
known? In Shaul's original command, in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vayomer HaMelech Mot Tamot Achimelech Atav Achol Beit Avicha, right? And they were with him in Pasuk Yud Al. Vayishlach HaMelech Akrot Achimelech Ben Achitov HaKon Vet Kol Beit Aviv HaKonim Asher Benov. Vayavu Kol Mel HaMelech. They're all there. They're all there. And he says, kill everybody who's there. Right? And then, after Doeg kills everybody who's there, there's this other Pasuk Yotet, which is actually totally surprising, which is about the city that's somewhere else, that's not at the Givah, that's not at the Ramah, and Doeg apparently goes there and eradicates the whole city, treating it like Ir HaMalek, right? And that's, you know, was never commanded by Shaul in any Pasuk. That's my point. Now, so kind of, I think, to put this all together, we see here the, I won't call it the end because things can still get worse. But we see here a true descent of Malchut Shaul, which originates in the problematic character of Shaul at this point. And I think we've kind of fleshed that out very, very nicely and more or less answered all of the questions that are raised about the Perek along the way. In the time remaining, I want to point out that there's another side to all of this. And this involves an important methodological point. And I want to try to introduce a certain kind of terminology, this is Yair Shrachman's point previously. Let's begin with a question. If the Perek is about the character of Shaul and the descent of Malchut Shaul, then the last few psukim are very, very strange, because suddenly these psukim, it's a switch of scene. After the eradication of the Ir Nov, suddenly Evyatar runs away, and suddenly we come to what? We come to Perek Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Ve'agid Eviatar leDavid kiarag sheol etkone Hashem ve'yomer David leEviatar yadati beyamahu kisham doeg adomi kiagid yagid sheol anochi saboti kol. What's David doing here? Right. So you could say that David is just here as attack on, because a story of, or Cain Amalek story requires a refugee, and the refugee happens to run to David, so it's not really part of the parak, right? That's one thing you could say. But I think that although there's something true about that, it's not the full story. And here let me explain what I kind of mean. In Tanakh, sometimes there's this idea, I've talked about this terminology before. In every scene, or in a scene, or in a story, you can have a point of view, the point of view of the characters in the scene, and then you can have a point of interest. Now, let me explain the difference between a point of view and a point of interest. A point of view is what the characters in the story are seeing and talking about, etc., etc., etc. And then the point of interest is, on some level, who everybody is really concerned with, even though it's not apparent that everybody's really concerned, or who we, the reader, are really concerned with, or who it's really about on some plane. And often, there's a gap between point of view and point of interest in Prakim. And sometimes, when you have this gap between point of view and point of interest, the character's the point of interest comes or resurfaces at the end of things. And I'd like to say that Perek Kaf Bet is like a perfect example of this kind of thing, where the point of view throughout the Perek is Shaul, his point of view, or it's the Bnei Binyamin, or it's the Avadim, or it's Doeg, or it's Achimelech, or anything along these lines, right? But the point of interest throughout the entire parak is Ben Yishai, right? They're talking about Ben Yishai. What's going on with Ben Yishai? Where is Ben Yishai? Is Ben Yishai in the cave? Is Ben Yishai in the forest? Is Ben Yishai not a threat? Why did you conspire with Ben Yishai against me? Did you conspire with Ben Yishai against me? Was there a Sheila Hashem? You have to die because you conspired with Ben Yishai? Meaning, in a kind of backhand point of interest way, the entire parak is about Ben Yishai. And suddenly, by no surprise, and this is what Yair caught, Ben Yishai, now known as David, because he's actually now a character again, as opposed to just a point of interest, he resurfaces at the end as a full-blown character, and something very important here is going on, right? So I want to read those psukim where David resurfaces at the end of the parak and analyze there what's going on, because I think the details are important. They aren't just incidental. It's also a story about David in some way. So let's take a look at, let's pick it up for the moment then in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, in the story of David and Abiatar. Something very interesting here. Ve'agid Eviatar leDavid, in Kafal. Ve'agid Eviatar leDavid ki harag Shaul et Kohane Hashem. Ve'yomer David leAviatar, yadati bayom hahu ki sham doeg Adomi. I knew that doeg was there on that day. Ki agid yagid leShaul, he'll tell us. I knew he'd tell Shaul. Anochi saboti b'chol nefesh beit avicha. David says something shocking, and he uses a funny word in Pasuk Kafbet. Anochi saboti b'chol nefesh beit avicha. What does that mean, saboti? It literally means that he caused. I caused it. So David takes account. He takes responsibility. This is my fault, because I knew Doeg was there, and I still asked for the sword, so I caused all of this, right? But it's very funny. That word has already appeared here. Now that word, saboti, take a look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'yomer Melech haratzim hanitzavim, sobu v'amitu kohanim, surround them and kill them. And they didn't do it. So Shaul said it to Doeg in Pasuk Yud Chet. V'yomer Melech haratzim hanitzavim, savata upaga. The word sab or sobu, meaning surround, is go do the action of killing. And David used the exact same, or the Mikra has David used the exact same word, Anochi Saboti. Now it doesn't mean David surrounded them, because David didn't surround them, he just caused it. But it's connecting up here and creating this interesting tension. Who really did it? Who really did it? Who's the real cause? Shaul. Who did it? Doeg, right? Saboti, right? But David says, Anochi Saboti. But he didn't really do it. He's taking responsibility. So in other words, this is an how would you evaluate this? It's quite praiseworthy, I think. This is ethically praiseworthy, to acknowledge one's role even in an indirect way. He's no more than an indirect cause. Others did it, others surrounded, others struck the death blow, others ordered it, right? But he's taking responsibility because he caused it in some sort of indirect way. So this is a shining example of ethical greatness. Where even though he's not the one who committed genocide, he is not the Edomites, he is not the guy with the sword, he's not the guy who ordered it, right? But still, he is taking responsibility. Now, next pasuk Kaf Gimel. Shva iti al tira Stay with me, don't be afraid. Stay with me, I'll protect you. Now, as Yair Strachman pointed out, who's David to protect anybody? What kind of power does he have? He's just the guy hiding in the cave. He's the guy hiding in the forest. He's got 400 desperados. But even so, he is willing to say, I will protect you, Evyatar HaKohen. This is an example of, again, David coming to the fore, his Malchut coming to the fore, etc. And I will add to this another point. Who else does David wind up with besides a Kohen in this parak? Who else does he, suddenly appears who's never been here before? When he ran away to the cave and then to Moab, who told him to come back?
God.
Pasuk Hey, Vayomer Gad Navi El David Lo Teshev Bamitzudah Lechu. Who's David's Navi? No, who's normally considered David's main Navi guy? It's not Shmuel. Shmuel is Shaul's Navi. Who's David's Navi? God. So what happens in the malach of this parak is that the accoutrements or the apparatus of David's malchut begins to emerge to the fore. We have, he now has a Navi, right? He has soldiers. He has an alliance with the king of Moab, right? He's got a foreign alliance. He has a Kohen. So he's got a Kohen, a Navi, an army, and an alliance, right? So while the malchut of Shaul is sinking, the malchut of David is emerging, and these are mirror images and opposites of each other, right? So the fact that he's ethically praiseworthy, the fact that he can offer refuge to Evyatar, the fact that his malchut is beginning to assemble itself throughout the parak, there's this reciprocity, you know, one is going down and one is going up. Now, here's the last point, and I'll wrap up with this. Take a look at the phrase, the last pasuk of the parak, Ki asher yivakeshet nafshi yivakeshet nafshecha. Nafshi, nafshecha, this ring any bells? Ring any bells? Yivakesh nafshi nafshecha. Go back to the very beginning of Perek Yudchet, the story of David and Yonatan. Take a look at Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Aleph, when David and Yonatan first encounter each other. Yudchet Aleph says as follows. Vayhi kichalotolu daber el Shaul v'nefesh Yonatan nikshara b'nefesh David v'yaveh Yonatan kinafsho. There's a kesher of nefesh v'nefesh between Yonatan and David. David knows how to make kishrei nefesh. And that's exactly what he says to Evyatar. Yivakesh nafshi, yivakesh nafshecha. Their nefashot are tied together. The same way the nefashot of Yonatan and David were kshurim echad bashini. What kind of ksharim does Shaul HaMelech understand? He understands, well, actually we have it in this parak. Take a look at the beginning of parak kafet pasuk. Zion. Vayomer Shaul l'Avadav ha'nitzavim alav Shimon ha'bnei Yimini. Gam kochem yitein ben Yishai sadot u'kramim, v'kochem yitein tzari alafot b'sarei me'ot. Ki k'shartem kochem elai. The k'sharim that Shaul knows about are the k'sharim of power, of bribes, of sarei alafim, of sarei me'ot, of sadot and kramim. In other words, his whole method is that of power, and that those the k'sharim he understands, and sadot and kramim, and can he give you all that? No. But David is a completely different personality. David's personality is kishrei nefesh. You see it with Shaul and Yonatan, and you see it here again with David and Yonatan, you see here again with David and Evyatar, and therefore I think it kind of, they're almost mirror images of each other. David as the person of kishrei nefesh, his machot here begins to rise, and is able to provide refuge to Evyatar, and he begins to build up his Navi and his Kohen and etc. And as opposed to Shaul, who understands the Kishrei Koach or the Kishrei power, his Malchut begins to sink, and everybody is against him, and etc., etc., as we've discussed. To put this all together, and we'll end with this last point, this Perek is the story where David finds himself. He emerges from the cave, and he begins to become David for real. If in the previous Perek, he wandered and was completely lost, and wound up in the role of Goliath somehow in Gat. Here, he somehow goes into the cave and comes out, and suddenly now he's David. So these two brought him together, Kaf Aleph and Kaf Bet, the real story of the wanderings of David, are the story of David becoming lost and David becoming found. And here at the end of Parak Kaf Bet, this is where David, so to speak, becomes found. And we'll end with that.
Just
yeah.
In terms of, I thought you were going to finish this up in terms of the comparison, the contrast between David and Shaul, where David immediately after the story takes responsibility upon hearing it from Abiatar, while in the Amalek story, Shaul took a very long time.
Yeah. That's the fifth point of parallelism in the story. Good, that's good. I think you're 100% right. The whole story in Parak Tetrav is about Shaul denying responsibility in the Amalek. And that can even explain why the Amalek imagery is used here. That's really good. Shaul denies responsibility in Parak Tetrav. David takes responsibility here in Parak Kaf Bet. And that's also part of the contrast theme. Yefem. Good. Okay. Oh, is Marv at 7:30 now?
Yeah.
Oh, finally I had the extra 15 minutes. Okay. So if I have the extra time, I'll add one point of intra-biblical exegesis. What do I mean by that? I'll add one thing to this whole discussion. I think Sefer Tehillim fits into the reading we provided here today. Take a look in Sefer Tehillim Kuf Mem Bet. Tehillim Kuf Mem Bet. Famous Mizmor, we sometimes say it in when we say Tehillim Yeshiva. You have early Marv?
No.
What? I'm joking. Tehillim Kuf Mem Bet says, nice little Mizmor. It's that one. It's the cave of Perak, Perak of Bet.
Maybe it's the cave where he...
Maskil of David. No, I think it's clearly Beyoto b'ma'ara, when David was in the Ma'ara. I think this goes back to when he's in the cave, right? And he ran to Gat, and then he went and hid in a cave before he came out and went to Moab. Before he came out and went back to the forest. Before he came back to Yudah. When he was at the moment of lowest possible low, before he's become completely halach libud. Beyoto b'marat tfila. There was a tfila there. Koli el Hashem ezak, koli el Hashem etchanan. Eshpoch lefanav sichi, tzarati lefanav agid. Bitatef alai ruchi, vata yadati nitivati. Ba'orach zu halech, tamnufach li. David turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Lefi Mizmor Tehillim, according to Mizmor Tehillim, the transition that we see in David in Perek Kaf Aleph when he emerges from the cave and is found and becomes David is precisely because he's able to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I think that's the kind of the interpretive comment made by Mizmor Kuf Mem Bet on our story, on our Perek. Always, almost many times, every time you have a Mizmor, it's not just about the religious implications of that mizmor per se, but often when they give you a reference, it's not. I'm going to say something that most people consider, I guess it's kfira. It's not a historical claim per se. It's not that David happened to be in the cave and he wrote down this mizmor and he came out with takim, and later on, 35 years later at court, they went through his notes. And they said, "Oh, he wrote this mizmor in the cave, right?" And therefore, they introduced this mizmor in Kuf Mem Bet Beyotoba Ma'ara. That's perfectly possible. Okay, it's perfectly possible, right? Or maybe Tehillim as an act of poetry, right? It provides a setting, a context to explain when David was in the cave. This is what he said. Not that he wrote this or said those words, but this is who and what he was, and this is what he said, and this is what explains what happened to him afterwards, right? So in other words, it's a recreation as opposed to a historical claim on some level. I think that's a better way to read those kinds of historical references in Tehillim, although you can't really know one way or the other. Okay, and the Mefarshim differ about this kind of thing. Okay. Oh, I finished early.
Yeah.
Cool.
First time?
Yeah, well, there's always a first. I finished early. It was by accident, you know, it wasn't on purpose. Trust me, I would have known that I had till 7:30, I would have finished early.
I believe.